This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas, powered by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, I'm Philip C and welcome to the Breakfast Grill. Now, if you're like me, you would have had some milk with your coffee and tea this morning, and chances are it was from a household brand called Dutch Lady. On today's Breakfast Grill, I'm in conversation with Ramjit Kaur Virik, Managing Director at Dutch Lady Milk Industries Berhad, Malaysia's leading milk manufacturer and provider. Very good morning.
Good morning. I'm fine, thank you. And really, hope you've had your glass of milk this morning as well.
I most certainly did. My mum always stocks the fridge with Dutch Lady milk.
Oh, please thank your mum. For me.
Well, you know, you've been in the role as a CEO for close to a year, more than a year, in fact, June last year. But in the height of the pandemic, I have to say, must have been super difficult to manage the role, considering that you've talked about this triangular role of being able to nourish the nation, committed to shareholders to deliver a profit at the same time at an affordable price. What has been the biggest challenge for you as a CEO in the past 1 year?
I mean, I've been in Dutch Lady for 10 and a half years. So I guess from a business perspective, it was easy to understand the landscape and what we stand for. But of course, stepping up into the role, and day two was actually MCO 3.0. And indeed, I think anyone, we have learned, I guess, from the first two MCOs. So the third MCO, we basically clocked in into the right way of working. And there was really about focusing on the primary processes. It's wonderful to be in an organization where our product is recognized as essential. And we have not stopped working, not even one day since the pandemic started. So I think what gives me energy to do what I do is the fact that we all mobilize behind focusing on the primary processes. Primary processes here is making sure we can make our milk and making sure that it can be on the shelf. Now, you asked about challenges, right? Of course, challenges is all about how do you do that in the midst of working in a completely different way.
Yeah.
And yes, so we use the concept of agility when we do our way of working. I think the bigger challenge, if I reflect over the past 1 year, was also the up and down that you spoke about cost. You know, but before, when we go to cost, we also had the floods at the end of the year, and we were impacted. 22 of our own employees were impacted by the floods and had to relocate. And we had disruptions to our supply chain as well. Your question on balancing the triangle, indeed, I think every company and every CEO, every boardroom is having this question. And we keep balancing it. Of course, the inflationary cost still continues. It's not over. The inflationary
far
prices,
from it.
Yes, it's going higher actually now into quarter three and the outlook. There is a bit of light at the end of the tunnel. I think it's leveling off if you look at the trending, but it will stay at an all-time high.
And let's talk about that balance of price and inflation versus the profit number, because the first quarter numbers were pretty good. Net profit increased by about 300 million ringgit, 16% year on year. That's on the revenue side. Core net profit also did drop the 29% quarter on quarter due to higher dairy raw material prices and increase in brand investments. How difficult has it been to pass the cost to the consumer?
Yes, and pricing is always an output of that triangle, right? On one hand, we need to balance our purpose to nourish the nation by providing our nutritious products in an affordable way. On the other hand, exactly like you said, we have our shareholders, our commitment to our shareholders to run a business. And indeed, the increasing cost of dairy raw materials and the supply chain disruptions and the fluctuation of the currency exchange are all impacting our cost of doing business. However, I think I do need to acknowledge that the demand for dairy as a nutritious product continues to be on the high. So in that sense, we are very lucky that Malaysians are becoming more nutrition focused, and dairy is playing a very strong role. And being, to your point, the number one dairy company in Malaysia, Dutch Lady plays a strong role in that. So yes, sir, we've had to review our portfolio, and we have already actually taken some price increases, but we try to do it in a way depending on the portfolio, depending on the mix, depending on the landscape, the competitors, and again, balancing this profit versus nourishing the nation.
I understand the challenges you have as you contend with increasing costs. The plus side is that you have a demand profile that remains resilient and robust. Help me understand how much portion of that cost is passed to the consumer versus perhaps the efficiencies that you have put in place to reduce cost.
Yeah. Well, the short answer to that is we are not able to pass on the full cost of the increase in the dairy raw materials in price increases. However, what we have done is we have looked to optimize costs everywhere. And it's not just about, you know, saving money from whether it's from our supply chain or media, but it's actually throughout the P&L line. So what we do, even right from the top, we use a principle called revenue growth management. We look at channel mix, product mix, how can we optimize our trading spend? Of course, then you have your distribution and selling optimization and saving money everywhere. And ultimately, it's also about ensuring we can still invest in our people and our brands. But I must say it has been a tough juggling of the costs versus meeting the numbers that we need to meet as our budget numbers and our ambitions.
Must have been super challenging because just looking at one of your key components, skim milk powder, right? Rising consistently over the last 5 years. But if you look at just the 1 year you were the CEO, 30% increase from 3,100 to nearly 4,000, right? How do you manage that, right? Is there any hedging policy you can put in place to manage these rising raw material prices?
Well, we do buy forward, right? So actually, we do buy 4 to 6 months forward. And that is why, although, yes, you have quoted our Q1 numbers, actually, the worst is yet to come. Yeah, so in that sense, we are constantly looking for what is coming ahead and therefore adjusting and having these discussions. You know, how much can we cut costs? How much do we need to price up? And this balancing act and how much can we save throughout the P&L? And what is the mixed choices? And we also shouldn't forget the supply chain disruption. It's not just a price discussion. It's also availability.
Yeah.
There have been moments that our factory where we had to stop a line because raw materials were not even there.
How many days of disruption did that entail?
Well, we've had anywhere from 2 days to 7 days, depending on the raw materials, depending on the line. And it's quite funny. Sometimes I joke with my colleagues, if you go back to the pre-pandemic era, usually commercial is the one that runs the business, right? So what can you sell? The pressure is on sales. In today's world, the pressure is on supply chain. So with the tables have sort of turned.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's and it's so funny to hear the conversation between my sales director and my supply chain lead. And it's like, you know, the sales director is like,
just
hey,
take it,
what can you produce? I will sell. So it's actually the tables have turned. So for me as the leader of this organization, price is just one part of the dilemma. And yes, we forward buy currency fluctuation. Yes, we have a hedging policy. The bigger challenge that I see is availability.
Can you help me understand, you know, specifically Dutch Lady's supply chain challenges and its resilience? Because very much you rely on Friesland Campina for very much of your raw materials, right? They source it for you. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is that an asset or liability for Dutch Lady Milk Industry simply because of being over-reliant on your parent company?
No, indeed. I think any large company, our supply chain is very complex. I don't know where everything comes from, but I know it comes from all over the world. Yes, we do buy via our largest shareholder, which is Friesland Campina, but we also support local dairy, right? So we also buy from the Department of Veterinary Services, where we purchase milk from the local farmers as well. We're proud to share that we're also one of the largest purchasers of local fresh milk. I think the bigger topic is the sustainability of food, right? The food security agenda is also a very current topic. And I think with the pandemic and the supply chain disruptions, this has become even more important and more current today. The point is, I think, balancing the two. So we are not self-sufficient today in our dairy supply. There is an ambition by the Ministry of Agriculture to become self-sufficient by 2025. We are working with them. We have signed a memorandum of collaboration last year as well. And we've been supporting them since 2008.
What's the ambition like? Is it to basically have 50% of your raw materials from locally sourced produced?
Well, it's a bit of a mix, right? And I think it's because not all the liquid milk that we buy, the fresh milk, is for our portfolio, which is the fresh milk portfolio. Yep. We have a very diverse portfolio. We also have powder portfolio, and those are normally imported. You spoke about SMP. Yes, so those are imported from the larger dairy producing countries. Right? So we buy from the commodities market. We also have different portfolios. So it's a bit of a mix, depending on what we have. But the ambition is for the complete fresh milk portfolio to be self-sufficient 100% by 2025. Today, we're about 60% in Malaysia.
I see. So your portfolio becomes increasingly local. I would also challenge you to say your competition also has become increasingly local as well, hasn't it? You know, you joined Dutch Lady, I think, about more than 10 years ago. The landscape there is totally different from what you saw in the past 1 year. You have the likes of Farm Fresh doing exceptionally well. They've actually a powerful distribution channel. How do you position Dutch Lady now vis-a-vis local competitors?
I get that question a lot, and I would like to turn that question into an opportunity. If I look at the purpose that we have as an organization and as an industry, we are producing milk. And milk, as we know, is a nutritious product. Our vision is to nourish our planet and people in every stage of life. If you look at the penetration of milk in this country, we are decent. It's about 80 over category penetration in a year. Mm. However, the per capita consumption of milk is still very low. It's only about 10 to 11 liters per year per adult compared to more developed markets like the European markets at about 40. So there's still a long way to go. So for me, when I look at competition, I look at us together driving the agenda to grow the consumption of milk in the country. Because at the end of the day, I mean, we're still the number one dairy company.
Yeah.
And I truly believe that, you know, competition is good because you're creating a lot more dynamics. You're creating more accessibility to milk. You're creating the awareness of the nutrition of milk. So it's about let the pond get bigger. That's my philosophy.
Sure, the pond can get bigger, but there must be a line you want to draw in the sand, right? It cannot go below a certain percentage, right, that market share.
Yeah, but like I said, as long as the pond gets bigger, the pie, your slice will only get larger. And that's why we go on the concept of penetration versus market share. Because market share is, I call it, you can define your market share however you want. You know, you can define your small
pond,
your
big pond.
You can call it the liquid milk segment in chocolate flavored in this. You know, you can really define the pond as you want.
Yeah.
Whereas penetration is different. I think penetration opens up the mind. And my dream is that every Malaysian drinks milk every morning in every household.
So you've painted this opportunity that there is a growth trajectory that is going to be driven by a rising economy, that people will want to drink more milk per capita. Hence, perhaps that explains the new facility at Banda and Stack. You know, I used to drive to PJ. I reminisce over the two cows that sit at the entrance of the Dutch Lady facility. But it makes a lot of sense to move to Banda and Stack because it's limited in your capacity expansion in PJ and you're moving over to Negeri Sembilan. What is the expected output and production capacity you plan to introduce in the next 3 to 4 years with that facility in Negeri Sembilan?
Let's start first with that, what you said, that iconic presence that we have. And maybe for your benefit, we will be taking the two cows with us.
Oh, no.
So we will be moving them with us. Okay. I think they are part of the business. We have been in PJ since 1963. Hmm. We are as old as Malaysia. And I have photos, and one day I can show them to you if you like, of when we first started the building that factory in 1963. There was nothing there. But of course, the city is upon us, and that is now redesignated as a commercial area, and we're running out of space. Yes, and that's why we embarked on this journey to move to Banda and Stack. As you have read, yes, we are investing more than 400 million. It's actually gone up because of the inflation as well. And yes, we are looking. The land size itself is actually 3 times that of our current facility. However, yes, we're not building the whole thing at one go. We are building a capacity which is now double what we have today with an expansion to double that more. So we can grow 4 times of what we have today at the PJ site.
Are you building for export?
Yes. So actually today we already export our portfolio to some markets, to Singapore, Brunei, Maldives. And actually there are a lot more demand coming as well. But we've run out of capacity.
Yeah.
And being in NSTEC is, you know, in the largest halal hub in Malaysia. I think that also plays a lot to the hub that it can play to export and the location in itself. So yes, we have a good ambition to also be an export market.
Where do you see yourself in 2025, you know, in terms of the portfolio being able to serve local versus overseas markets? What's the mix like?
Well, if you ask me today, predominant of our volumes is for local because we just don't have that capacity.
Yep.
And of course, in Malaysia, we still have a trajectory for growth. I'm a Malaysian myself. My first ambition is to make sure the rakyat of Malaysia start to be more nutritious and build their nutrition credentials, which is actually quite alarming. We can come to that in a later part of this interview. You know, but indeed, and of course, the export market is also an opportunity for us to drive. I don't know what is that mix, but of course, we are building the factory based on local. So the business case that we have,
premised on local demand.
Is premised on the local demand, and it shows our commitment to nation building, to really invest in this country. Mm. And I think what's more interesting about NSTAC is not just that it's a new factory that doubled the capacity, but it's also an IR 4.0. Yes, so you want to know more about
this? So that 400, 500 million, all that gadgetry with AI, IoT and whatnot. For me, the bigger question is, does it affect your dividend policy in the short term? Because you're making investments now for the long-term returns. Are we going to see a depressed dividend policy in the short term then?
Well, if you have seen our share market and our reports, you would have already noticed that we have reduced our dividend payouts in the last few quarters. And that is because we have made a public announcement that we are funding the build with internally generated funds. We actually sold the land in PJ last year, and that's why we had record profits, but it's purely a one-off from the land sale. And that land sale, the proceeds is being used to invest in the new factory. What I think warms me is, I think on one hand, Friesland Campina is our largest shareholder, and we also have some large local minority shareholders. And it's nice to see that everyone is with us on this journey and investing for the future, for generations to come. I'm not sure if you know that Friesland Campina is actually owned by farmers. So we are owned by 15,000 Dutch, German and Belgian farmers in the Netherlands. So they also believe in the purpose of dairy and nutrition. And if you are a farmer, you don't think about what is your next quarter. You think about generations. They just celebrated 150 years with 6-7 generations of farmers in their fold.
More than double the age of our country. On The Breakfast Grill, I'm in conversation with Ramjit Kaur Virik, Managing Director at Dutch Dairy Milk Industries Berhad. After the break, their mission to nourish the nation. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Welcome back on The Breakfast Grill. I'm in conversation with Ramjit Kaur Virik, Managing Director at Dutch Lady Milk Industries Berhad, as we understand how Ramjit has had to balance profit, price rises and increased competition. Now, Ranjit, we had an earlier conversation about the challenges you have on the financial side. How do you kind of translate it into prices? But your core purpose has been very clear: to nourish the nation. What is the current state of nourishment of our nation?
Thanks for that question, and it's my favorite topic to discuss. I truly believe that for any organization to thrive, you need to have a very strong purpose. And, you know, being a Malaysian myself and being in this company for 10 and a half years, I'm so proud to be working for an organization that has a very strong and purposeful purpose. And our full statement is actually nourishing our planet and people in every stage of life. Let me break it down a little bit. So nourishing our planet, of course, has a sustainability angle, doing it right, but also it alludes to the fact that we want to be an export hub. We can also nourish the planet. And when we say people, it's also twofold. People there, of course, it's our consumers, and we want to nourish them in every stage of life. And we have the portfolio that we call from womb to tomb. You know, we have a portfolio that can transcend across every stage of a consumer life. But nourishing people also means nourishing our employees. Mm. We are striving and we're committed to become the best place to work. And we truly believe that investing in our brands and our people is the right way to go.
Can we just emphasize on this whole life cycle about womb to tomb and deep dive on the aspect of children? Because, you know, you've done many surveys, nutritional studies about children. And I think what struck me is in the recent survey, huge vitamin D deficiencies and a quarter of our children are stunted. That's a shocking statistic. Just a mixture of pre-pandemic. So the situation could be even much worse.
Yes, and I'm a mother myself. I have two boys, and of course, the nutrition of children is very dear to a lot of us. And why is that important? It's because when your children of the nation is healthy, it is a direct correlation with the progress of the economy and the country. So it is in our interest as a nation to have a healthy base in order to grow from. And you're absolutely right. The statistics is alarming. The nutritional standards of the Malaysian Malaysian children is so worrying. Let me give you some numbers. 70% of our children today are deficient in calcium. 84% deficient in vitamin D. One out of three children do not eat breakfast. They don't have anything when they go to school in the morning. Therefore, they are unable to concentrate and learn. One out of four is anemic. And actually, yes, the stunting rate is now 21.8%. So one out of five Malaysian children is stunted, and that again has a direct correlation. And you may be wondering, you know, how does that compare to other countries? It's sad to say that our stunting rate in Malaysia is higher than other developing or underdeveloped countries like Thailand and Kenya. Our stunting rate is higher than
why is that
countries. Well, it's a combination of factors, but it boils down to nutrition intake. If you think about it, we have what we call the dual issue. On one hand, we have an obesity. I'm sure you've heard about obesity rising, but we also have a nutrition deficiency in children. When you look at this, and it's happening across, it's happening in the rural areas, but it's also happening in the urban areas. And we call it the urban poor population. And what is happening is when we look at the dietary intake of children that they are having today, it is quite scary, the amount of processed food, sugar-rich food, and I think people are just not aware of what kind of food they're giving. Processed food, for example, is very high, and that's what a lot of people are giving their children. So I think the nutritional understanding, knowledge, needs to improve in our nation.
So you've been caught in this crosshairs also about this whole plan for a sugar tax. And, you know, as you know, the government's fiscal position is very tight, and there's a lot of conversations on this. But you've been on record to say, look, let's focus on getting the carrot versus the stick in place here. Help me understand what that carrot is.
I am very much in favour of the nutritional agenda of the country, right? So I think, yes, sugar is bad, especially added sugar. It's not healthy, and those are the start of a lot of the nutritional issues that we see in this country. Also for adults, the obesity level on adults and kids is related to the sugar intake. However, I think what is a little bit missing is whenever this policy, so the intent is good, but when these policies are put into place, there is a bit of a miss in the step. There's been a bit of lack of engagement with the industry and also understanding, for example, the different types of sugar. So in sugar, in milk, for example, there are naturally present sugar called lactose. And lactose has been certified by the WHO as what you can say a good sugar, because it's low glycemic index. It's there, you know, for sustaining energy. And you need energy. Anyone needs energy in order to do what they do. It is the added sugar that is the bad sugar. You know, however, if you look at the way the government has been implementing the sugar tax, they call total sugar.
Total sugar, broad-based.
So they even include lactose. And that's where the dilemma happens, because why are you not allowing the good sugar to be consumed, but you are also taxing it? So I think it's in the implementation of the intent that can be improved, and we appeal right to the government. Let's have this public-private
and you're not listening.
Yeah,
and you're not listening at all.
Well, we are engaging, but I think it's also understanding. It's a very complex topic. It's not easy, and I know implementing policies takes a lot of time, takes a lot of different ministries. So you have Ministry of Health, you have Ministry of Finance, you have Royal Customs. There's so many bodies that needs to come together. And it's also, you have to make sure it is not being used opportunistically by other companies as well.
So just reflecting on what you've said, really the challenge here seems to be the bluntness of the tool, that it's over-encompassing for the wrong reasons. But if you go back to the history of Dutch Lady, you made many bold changes before. You eliminated condensed milk from the portfolio, making a commitment to reduce sugar consumption by about 40% in 2013. What's the target then for you in terms of removing all these added sugars by what year? By 2025, 2030, what's the target for Dutch Lady?
Yes, you're right. So we exited the sweetened condensed milk category. It was part of our journey to be a lot more healthier. A couple of years ago, we also reduced in our portfolio 25% of sugar as well. And actually, I must say, our portfolio is all healthier choice compliant. So we are already at the lowest level. Yeah, and like I said, milk naturally has sugar. So lactose is good sugar that is in the milk, which accounts for the total sugar by definition of the government. If you look at it today, the amount of sugar that we have in our portfolio is very, very low already. And therefore, it makes me also very proud to be working in this company. Any more further? Yes, sir. We are working towards it, but we are actually at a very, very healthy level. And a lot of our portfolio is already added sugar free, especially for a lot of our infant powder range. And it only has lactose. But that's where the dilemma happens, right? Because when the government implements these policies without looking at the total complexity complexity of what it means and coming up with something that is good. And if you do taxation, and if you go back to your earlier conversation about pricing, we don't have a choice, right? Then the intent becomes something wrong.
Yeah, because,
and then you have to increase price, and then you're reducing the accessibility of affordable milk products to the nation, and then it's a cycle.
Yeah. So listening to you and just building on that question on portfolio, you know, we are a changing nation. We started this conversation of the big challenges we have as a nation. But, you know, honestly, looking at myself, I'm increasingly a couch potato tied to my streaming accounts. Fast food delivery options abound. A lower birth rate, aging populations. How are these macro trends affecting your product portfolio? What's shaping your product portfolio for the future?
Like I said, we have a product that is wonderful because it can go from womb to tomb. Yes, and indeed, if you look at the nutritional criteria of the nation, there is a play in every part of a development. So yes, these trends are there. So I think we already spoke about sugar. So that's definitely one of the topics that we have. However, I know Malaysians also love our flavors. We have many nice flavors like our banana, kurma, and our new can milk drink as
Your juice milks.
The juicy milk.
Which I have to say, I was questioning. It's like, do I really want to have mango infused milk?
And how was it for you?
It was all right.
Yeah, and please have that chill. I think it's really relevant for our weather as well. But indeed, to your point, aging population, that's something we're looking at as well to see what can we do to also help that aging population. We have actually already started testing and learning some of our portfolios in that space. And really, I think it's really about the whole spectrum. And if you talk about vitamin D is not naturally present in fresh milk. But we know calcium is, right? And we all know you need vitamin D for the absorption of calcium in your body. So what we did was, already for the last couple of years, we fortify our milk with vitamin D. So that is some of the things that we do basis some of those nutritional surveys that we've had. So the vitamin D that we put into the product is enough for your daily consumption as well. So you call it about fortification of milk, because fortification of milk is important when you understand the nutritional needs of the country. And I think it goes back to your question about why is this so? Why is the nutrition so bad? Or in Malaysia, and we're getting worse. I think it's that education and understanding. So when you ask me about portfolio, we need to do it in a responsible way. We need to see what is the nutritional need of Malaysians, and then you innovate basis that.
And so, you know, as we reflect on, you know, being 1 year into the role, you've been in Dutch Lady actually for some time, but prior to that, you were in the tobacco and beer industry. I'm wondering whether there's a world of a difference between selling milk versus selling tobacco and beer.
Yes, that's an interesting question. And just to put it into perspective, I was in the tobacco and the beer industry for about 11 years. And when I was interviewing for this role at Dutch Lady 10 and a half years ago, when I got the role, I joked with my hiring director. I said, don't worry, I have to stay here at least 11 years, you know, because of all the sin that, from the sin industry.
The indiscretions.
So I call it, but I'm happy I was there and I grew a lot in those industries as well. And I have been more a commercial person, right? So I think I was more in the sales, in the marketing sort of a feel. And being in the tobacco and the beer industry teaches you a lot of things about building brands and building the basic fundamentals. Now coming into Dutch Lady, actually what I found as a turning point, because I became a mother myself, you know, I had kids myself. So even my nutrition knowledge and my needs changed personally. And I'm so happy I made that choice because, you know, I shared with you the purpose of the company. Let me share with you my personal purpose. And my personal purpose came to life when I joined Dutch Lady Milk Industries Berhad. So my personal purpose is to energize others and to enable everyone to reach their full potential. Why? Because those are leveraged on my strengths. I'm naturally quite an extrovert kind of person, and I bring energy to interactions that I have. And helping everyone reach their full potential is the role that I play with my sons, with my colleagues, with my friends, but also my role as the MD of DLMI to really, you know, help Malaysians reach their full potential. So that's what really drives me every morning. That's what wakes me up to do what I do. And you talk about the 1 year anniversary, but actually it's been easy when you have a strong purpose, and when my personal purpose aligns with the purpose of the organization, that's when magic happens.
Ramjit, thank you for your time on The Breakfast Grill. Ramjit Kaur Virik, Managing Director at Dutch Lady Milk Industries Berhad, as we understand how she plans to diversify and grow its portfolio as they try to meet the changing needs of our nation. I'm Philip C, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, where unlimited potential begins.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.